Ladies and gentlemen, we are here this morning, and for the record I would note that Judge Rovner is also on this panel and is with us by video, so she will be visible to the lawyers up there, and I believe that we are all visible to you. Is that not correct, Judge Rovner?
We're all visible. I'm hoping that whoever is at the podium will be visible.
She's not there yet, so we'll see. And is there a way we can get the volume up a little bit? All right, so our first case for this morning is Wagner against Teva Pharmaceuticals, and we will hear from Kathleen Wagner, who is now approaching the podium.
Good morning.
And you can see her, Judge Rovner?
Pardon?
I can see you, Ms. Wagner. This is much success.
Okay, very good. You may proceed.
Thank you. If it please the court, my name is Attorney Kathleen Wagner, and I'm also the litigant in this case. I am a almost 6-year breast cancer survivor. First of all, I would like to provide some brief history on this case because I think it's quite unique.
And if you wouldn't mind speaking up, so that all of the sound systems can work.
Should I move it forward a little bit? Is that better?
I think so. And if you just, kind of shout a little bit yourself,
okay,
it'll help.
I'll try to shout. Thank you.
There you go.
The drug that's involved in this case, it's identified as medroxyprogesterone acetate, and it is called MPA for short, and I will use MPA throughout my comments this morning. The drug was initially manufactured by Upjohn Corporation, and interestingly enough, in 1982, in the physician's desk reference, Upjohn indicated that they knew this caused mammary tumors in beagle dogs, but they didn't know what it did to humans. It was never involved in clinical trials required by the FDA because the FDA didn't require clinical trials back at that time. And subsequently, it was grandfathered in so that it didn't have to do clinical trials. I think that's somewhat unique and significant as it relates to this drug.
But could I ask you, Ms. Wagner, whether the manufacturer of, you took a generic version of this drug.
I started out in 1993 and 94 taking brand names. My doctor had specifically asked for the brand name and had provided some samples of the brand product. I started taking the generic in the year 2000. And took the generic drugs, which were part of the Bayer Laboratory family, Teva Pharmaceuticals, Bayer Pharmaceuticals, from 2000 through 2010.
And they're the only defendant at this point, Teva?
They are the only defendants left in this case at this time because there was a mutual resolution between the brand name companies and myself, effective May 15th, 2015.
So what I am not clear on is whether you think that Teva failed to bring its labeling into harmony with what the brand names were saying, or whether you think it just should have had a better, more comprehensive label or a different design. If you could focus on that, that would be helpful.
Yes, Your Honor. I am going to be arguing today that the problem is not one of impossibility. It's not a problem of sameness, because the issue here really is the fact that the generic companies that are the defendants here today did not timely match the labels of the brand name.
But did you ever think the brand name labels were sufficient? Because I understood the district court to be saying that since you didn't find those labels sufficient, it wouldn't really have mattered if they had.
Yes, and
today,
that is one of the three issues that I'm going to be directing today. I'm specifically going to be addressing impossibility and sameness. I'm going to be
Forgive me, Ms. Wagner. When you do this, if you could answer this question. Was Judge Peterson wrong? Said your position is that the brand name label itself was defective.
The reason I consider this significant is the message that was in the brand name label that was not in the generic label. It makes a huge difference in terms of why I contracted cancer, breast cancer. It's that message that was in the brand name label that the generic companies have a duty to match, to have sameness. They didn't match. And because they didn't match that label, I believe that that led to my cancer.
And what could you just review the omission, what they didn't say?
Yes. Specifically, what happened, as I was going through the historical perspective, in the National Health Institute, starting in 1999, had a study that was looking at this drug and looking at hormone therapy in general to ascertain information about heart, strokes, memory loss, and breast cancer specifically as well. And basically, the materials that they were looking at was the horse or equine estrogen and the synthetic progestin. And I call the court's attention to Exhibit 1, the last page of my amended complaint. And starting on page 42 and on page 43 is a diagram of the natural plant progesterone and the synthetic progestin. It is an organic chemistry substance, which is, of course, carbon-based, and carbon with its valence of plus 4 and minus 4 can be modified readily. The natural plant progesterone was modified by Upjohn so that it could get a patent and be able to be marketable. There isn't much money in selling plant progesterone. It is that modification that shows up on page 43 on Exhibit 1 of my complaint that is causing the unintended consequences that is resulting in the cancer issue. And if you look at that particular diagram, it's the unintended consequences of that modification in order to get the patent that is blocking the apoptosis of breast cells that are being proliferated in excess by medroxyprogesterone acetate. That also is mentioned on page 5 of my reply brief, that medroxyprogesterone isn't just for postmenopausal women. It is also part of most of the birth control pills, because it's often two different hormones. It's also a part of the Depo-Provera. Now, the three things that I'm most concerned about is that it isn't futile, as was stated in Judge Peterson's decision. And it is not... it doesn't meet the duty to sameness because it results in misbranding. And although the lower court's decision talked about the fact that there's no private cause of action to enforce the matching of the brand name label, there is, however, several sections of 21 U.S.C. that talk about the fact that if there isn't sameness, that in effect is misbranding. It parallels state claims. And that paralleling state claims is what brings us into being able to talk about this drug in the context of the products liability case.
But if we assume that the generic manufacturers failed to update their labels to correspond with changes in the brand name label, perhaps you can explain in what sense was the failure to update the cause or a cause of injury to someone such as yourself?
Because the warning specifically talks about the Women's Health Initiative study It talks about the fact that at the end of 3 years, the women that were in the group taking the synthetic progesterone had a 24% increase in cancer. And anyone seeing that warning would proceed to look at the Women's Health Initiative study. I didn't know about it until after I was diagnosed in 2010 because it wasn't available. And they certainly didn't follow up the next change that the brand name company did, and that is to have done a black box warning right up front at the beginning. They didn't do that. If I had known about the Women's Health Initiative study, I would have been advised to look at that. And there's lots of results coming out afterwards. For example, in 2003, they discovered that women that had hysterectomies had no increase in breast cancer. It was just those taking the medroxyprogesterone acetate. They would also have discovered that because it blocks the apoptosis, that it changes the proliferation of the breast cells, and it is what's causing the cancer. Those research people articles did not come out until late 2014 and 2015. But it was known in 2002 that they abruptly stopped the component with the progestin, the synthetic progestin, that is blocking the apoptosis and our body's ability to hit the cell.
Okay, your time is up now, so thank you very much. Mr. Lefkowitz. Let Ms. Wagner get her things together.
Good morning, Chief Justice Wood. May it please the court, and thank you for accommodating me this morning. It's a privilege to argue here. The kind of claim that Ms. Wagner is arguing that she would like to be able to include here in what would effectively be a second amended complaint is not recognized under Wisconsin law, because Wisconsin law requires that you allege an inadequate warning. And as she maintains in her complaint at paragraph 3, she took both the generic and the brand for over 10 years. And in fact, even on appeal here in this court, she argues at page 8 of her reply brief just a few weeks ago that every defendant knew of the significant risks associated with MPA and failed to appropriately warn. And indeed, she says, still today, the labels only indicate that it should be taken for as short a time as possible with no data or guidance about the increased risks. That's in her reply brief at 16. So it's clear that
this isn't difficult for you, but Ms. Wagner was just discussing the black box warning that was added to the brand name drug, you know, the Provera, in September 2007, and which maintains that the generic manufacturers didn't add to their labels until April of 2010. Apart from who is authorized to bring a failure to update claim, could you discuss why you think that alleged failure to update would not support a claim of injury?
Thank you, Judge Rovner. There are two different responses. One is that the court obviously can take judicial notice of what is publicly available on the NIH's drug database, and that shows that the black box warning was put on the branded product at the end of 2007, and then immediately after, Barr submitted its CBE asking the FDA for authority to
CBE
change being affected. It's the a generic has to follow always, as this court acknowledged just a week and a half ago in the Houston case, what the brand has, but they still need authorization from the FDA. So it takes a few weeks, sometimes it takes a couple months to get that approval. And then by February 22nd, 2008, the Barr label completely matched the Provera label, and that's available publicly on the NIH drug database. Her argument, which is not in her complaint, it's just in her brief, that it didn't happen until 2012 is incorrect. She also stopped taking the drug in 2010.
So you're saying it's impossible that they would be actually simultaneous because the branded company has to move first and then this
correct.
Other process.
And this is why the same solicitude for the agency that is at issue in the Buckman case is at issue here, because fundamentally we're talking about the agency monitoring compliance with its own regulations and determining, obviously, if a drug is so unsafe, the FDA has the ability to simply recall it, stop it from being sold in stores. It has all the tools it needs. But in the normal course, it lets the generic company file the CBE, the change being affected, proposal, and then it accepts it, and then they make the change. And, of course, that happened in due course. But from a legal perspective, in addition to the fact that what she is really complaining about is just the failure to comply, in her view, even if it's not correct, with the federal obligation, which is preempted under Section 337A of the FDCA, which says there is no private right of action, she would also have to, in order to have any kind of a parallel claim, allege that the failure to comply with that federal obligation actually violated a state tort duty. And under Wisconsin law, there is no duty to have an inadequate warning. And even the warning that she claims that the generic didn't follow, she thinks is also inadequate, because she maintains that even today, or certainly even in 2010 when she was taking both the drugs, none of them, even the updated brand label, didn't have all the data, which she says didn't come out until 2014 and 15. So,
but I understood her to be arguing this morning that there would have been some incremental improvement if there had been a timely update by Teva or Barr or whomever.
Well, again, leaving aside, I think, the fact that the public record, which this court can take judicial notice of, suggests that that's not an accurate claim in her briefing. The fact is, a plaintiff has to, under Wisconsin law, prove not only the existence of the duty of warn and a failure to warn adequately, but also allege causation or injury. And when she says that even the brand label, which presumably didn't have to go through this update process, it had the right update, when she says even the brand label is inadequate, then she's not arguing in any coherent way, and in fact her allegations disprove this, that there was any incremental change, because she says fundamentally this product is just not safe, it's not being warned about properly. And as this court has recognized, when a drug manufacturer is faced with what is fundamentally a challenge to the safety or efficacy of its drug, and if it's an approved drug, there are only three conceivable options: to change the design, to change the warnings, or to take it off the market, and all three of those avenues are preempted.
Counsel, you indicated that the failure to update theory is not in the first amended complaint. Was any request made to amend her complaint to include that allegation?
No, Your Honor. The record, I've scoured the record, and until her briefing here in this court, there was never any request to amend. And I think it's important to point out that she did amend the complaint once, and in fact, she amended it after the Supreme Court's Bartlett decision. So basically, the Supreme Court had two preemption decisions in the area of generic drugs, Mensing and then Bartlett. After the latter of those two, she had the opportunity and took the opportunity to amend to try to come up with some theory that was not preempted. When she amended, she made her allegations about both the brands and the generic. Now, I understand she's now settled with the brand company, so now I guess she's comfortable to kind of give up the claim that the brand label was inadequate. She'd like to say the brand label was adequate, and some period of a month or two towards the tail end of her 10 years was inadequate, but that's actually not what she alleged in her amended complaint, and it's not even consistent, Your Honor, with what she's arguing here in her own reply brief. So I think that, just to touch very briefly on a couple of the other arguments she makes here, obviously she makes the argument that the strict liability theories are not preempted. That argument was also not raised before the district court, but in any event, the Wisconsin law under the restatement second is identical to the relevant law in the Bartlett case in New Hampshire. She suggests at some point that there might be a parallel misbranding claim, but as the Bartlett case in footnote 4 acknowledged, for that type of claim even potentially to be viable, and the court was dealing in that case with a hypothetical, liability would have to be based on new and statistically significant information that the FDA didn't have, and her argument is that all of this information was in the repository of the FDA and the NIH for years. Finally, she makes an argument about the FDA amendments. This court addressed that just 2 weeks ago in the Houston case. But I would say fundamentally there are two problems with her argument here. Number one, she is really arguing that the problem here is that Teva, in her view, even if it's not accurate, didn't update to a federal requirement. That is trying to assert a private cause of action for something that is rested solely with the FDCA, with the FDA and the DOJ. She doesn't connect the dots in terms of any causation, and in fact, as the judge said, her claim is contradictory because she claims that even today the brand label is not sufficient. And she didn't just say that before the judge below. She even says that in her appellate briefing here. And so I certainly don't think the judge abused his discretion by saying, you've already amended the complaint once. If you were to ask to amend the complaint a second time, it would be futile because of what you are arguing before me. And interestingly, she actually didn't change her argument even in her appellate briefing here.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
So, Ms. Wagner, you used up all of your time, but if you would like 1 minute to rebut, I will give it to you.
The district court mentions that it would be futile because I couldn't enforce the failure to promptly and adequately update the label. The label needed went through two phases with the brand name. First of all, they talked about the Women's Health Initiative study and what the findings were. And then subsequently, the FDA had them upgraded even further by doing the big black box warning. It was not timely in terms of the time that the generic companies did it. That, to me, is a significant difference. Secondly, right now between the appellate courts, there is the issue about the updating and does this change impossibility, because they obviously could update. And the significance here is, what is futile? If you're told about the 2014 study and all the changes that happened in the 2002 abrupt stopping of the use of medroxyprogesterone in the Women's Health Initiative, if you're told about that and you go and research it out, while it doesn't take this dangerous product off the market, it does allow you to do the research. And the research in the subsequent follow-up studies that have come out of the National Health Institute show, for example, that you have more abnormal mammograms. In fact, so many abnormal mammograms that by the time it's actually determinative, people are at stage 4. It also shows that when women stop taking, and this came out in the 2003 study, if you stop taking it, after 18 months, you didn't have abnormal mammograms anymore. You were down like normal people. So you can reverse it. And in fact, I've been off of it now for over 5 years and am fine. I did not have chemo and I did not have radiation. I couldn't because I got a staph infection from the second surgery. But it is reversible. And if I had been able to look at that information, there was a third alternative. I could have stopped taking it, just as women can stop taking the birth control pills that have Avid in it.
Okay, you need to wrap up now. So thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.
Thank you.